We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 174. The Yankees took care of business in Citi Field. I know some people might say they should have swept that series. We'll get into all of that, Scott. But I think overall, a solid stretch of baseball for the Yankees.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, at the end of the day, you just need to win those series. These are big, all these series coming up in the whole month are massive, massive games. So you want to make sure you come out ahead winning the series itself. You can live with that. If you don't sweep, I mean, obviously there's missed opportunities sometimes, but, you know, what are you going to do? Win the series. That's good baseball. Move forward. Stay ahead in the standings in the wild card and keep your eye on the Red Sox because we're coming for that ass.
Tuesday's loss was especially upsetting for me because my streak of the Yankees being undefeated in New York finally came to an end after three games. I thought it was going to be a Cleveland 21-game win streak.
Yeah, see, these are one of those things, man. I mean, you've been jinxing practically everything we've been talking about here, so I don't know why you would think that. It seems like you did jinx yourself on this, on your little streak.
Although, coming up, we have a little Greg Bird injury talk again. I said nothing about Greg Bird on last podcast, so that one's not on me.
It's not just the last podcast. You've done your damage. He's a tainted man.
No. Jack,
he's a beaten bird.
You can't retroactively jinx people. That's not how jinxes work.
It's a man jinx. You man jinxed him. Okay, I'm sorry, but he's cursed. That's it. He's done.
That's the man spreading of jinxing.
I don't even want to talk about man spreading. That's not a good place to go.
Coming up on this episode, Scott, you talked with Ryan Rucco.
Yeah, I had Ryan Rucco on earlier. It was an awesome conversation. The man is good at his job. I got to tell you, I was a fan beforehand, just listening to him when the Yankees are away, kind of that next squad when Michael Kay doesn't travel with the team. And I've always thought he's very good. So had a really good conversation with him, talked about the Yankees, the state of the Yankees, kind of his thoughts on it. He's a New York guy. We kind of just touched on that. You know, he grew up a Yankees fan. And so we talked about some of the broadcast stuff, but a lot about the on-the-field Yankees, some about his podcast and how he establishes relationships with players. So really good stuff with Ryan. We went for about 25, 30 minutes. So it was a fun conversation.
I'm looking forward to hearing that. Unfortunately, I was not able to do that. I figured my third day at my new job, it might be hard to dip out at lunch and go record a podcast.
Yeah, might not be the best thing to say to your new boss or whomever's the person that's you're reporting to that you got to go record a podcast now. So I got to peace out.
Right. Also, we have some. We announced the September 30th tickets are live. We've been getting people to be interested in that. Buying tickets is awesome to see. A lot of buzz on social media. Where can people get those tickets?
So you want to go to, first of all, they're on our social media accounts, but the link itself is smarturl.it/gamecrew. That's smarturl.it/gamecrew. You go there, buy the tickets, and it's through a site called Fivo. We're working with the Yankees on this one so that all the tickets are connected. You can pretty much pick your seats with your group, so all that's taken care of ahead of time. And then you're also given a code for your free t-shirt, which is, again, easily done on our fan shop. So we will have for $59, that's the September 30th. And again, we keep saying this, it's going down to that day. And it still seems like it's going down to that day, whether it's the wild card, whether it's our positioning within the playoffs or not, God forbid. Or what we really have our eye on is the AL East. I have a feeling, I think you made the prediction last episode, and I'm all on board with it, that it's going to be either scoreboard watching, or we'll know an outcome from maybe an earlier game from the Red Sox, and then something will be determined. So $59 gets you the game ticket in 205-206. You get a free custom t-shirt that I designed. That's on Twitter. You can see it there. It's a pretty awesome shirt. And also a pregame party at the Bronx Brewery. That's 2 16-ounce pints of the Bronx Banner Ale. You've been hearing about that from us quite a bit. It's a delicious beer. You got two of them on us. And then we worked out a deal with them for $4 16-ounce pints for the rest of the pregame. So really good stuff going on. $59, value up the ass on this one. Come on out. Bring your friends. Bring your family.
Looking forward to seeing some people that we saw at June 10th and also meeting a lot of new people. And yeah, I think it's coming down to that last weekend for the Yankees. It's just simple math. If you look, they're four back in the loss column. I know the Red Sox are playing tonight as we're recording, so it might be back down to three. But there's not much time. The Yankees, if they're going to win the division, it's coming down to that last weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think what we've been saying, the Red Sox are due for a nice little losing streak. And you know, they're not built the same way that a lot of these teams that are really getting into the postseason. They're thin. We talked about that when we talked with when you talked with Chad Jennings. Like, that was one of their big problems with that team is their depth. They don't have any. So when they do have injuries, you're not seeing the guys that the Yankees have. So I think when you come down to the end of a season, that really plays into it. And you know, we'll see if it takes their toll on them, but I expect it to happen. I think the Yankees are playing good baseball, and I expect that to continue as well. So definitely coming down to it.
Speaking of injuries, is Greg Bird fragile? Is he a pussy? Is he cursed? Is there some black magic going on here? What the hell is going on with Greg Bird?
It's Mark Teixeira 2.0 is what it is. This man cannot
stay
healthy.
This is worse than Mark Teixeira, I think.
Well, because we're seeing it early in a career too. I mean, Mark Teixeira had a pretty ridiculous career before he got to the Yankees. He was an older guy at that time. This is probably worse because he's a younger dude. He has a weird bone in the ankle that doesn't exist on most people. That's weird. Then he has these stiffnesses in places in his back. That's a problem for a guy that needs to swing a bat. You know, it just seems like every other day the dude's coming up with something. I don't know what it is. With him, if he's just, you know, now labeled injury prone, because that's following him for sure.
Well, he's 100% labeled injury prone at this point. He missed all of last season and essentially all of this season. Two straight seasons Greg Bird has essentially missed.
Yeah, so we don't even know what to expect from this guy anymore. We saw one half of a season in 2015, which seems like a lifetime ago. And then, you know, the infamous hot spring training when you deemed him our MVP. So this is a problem.
It's a problem because, like you said, we don't know what to expect from him. The rest of the season, I don't know. He's if he's If he's healthy, they'll play him when they can play him. But if we want to quit, like, just briefly talk about next season going forward, they're going to have another contingency plan, but a safer contingency plan than Chris friggin' Carter at first base if they think Greg Bird is making it through a whole season.
Oh, the sweet irony of this situation, because the man that you deemed MVP early on, that you said was going to be in the running, is now on the shelf, and the man that is taking his job and is most likely going to be that contingency plan going into next year is your boy, none other than Mr. Chase Headley. This is the guy that's taking the job. He's Wally Pipping Greg Bird.
He would have been the last player on the roster I would have thought to Wally Pip Greg Bird at first base. Unbelievable.
It's happening. The man's on, he's on fire. He's on fire. He's hitting from both sides of the plate. He's playing a good defense. He's a good guy in the clubhouse. Everybody likes
nice
him.
Guy.
He's a nice guy. We've always known that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And nice guy. And he's playing good baseball now. So when you put a good guy and good baseball together, that's a magical combination.
I know there's been some talk recently because Todd Frazier has actually been swinging the bat better too, if the Yankees would consider bringing him back. Who knows what's going to happen the rest of this season? I almost feel stupid talking about next year, but they again might bring back that Frazier-Headley duo and just shuffle those guys around the corner infield spots just until Gleyber Torres can eventually make his way to the big leagues.
Yeah, and you know Headley's coming back at this point. I mean, he's definitely proved himself extremely valuable now that, you know, with the change of position as well, as that he's hitting from both sides of the plate now. So he's not really a liability, from either side, which is awesome because he was. And he's definitely coming back. He's under contract, so he's coming back. And the Greg Bird situation is still fluid because, you know, until this guy can prove that he can stay on the field, then he's doing nobody any good because he's really just putting a wrench into plans, and he's giving, you know, anybody in the front office or managerial staff any confidence that he's going to be out there to play.
We also had Clint Frazier activated from the disabled list. He made a brief rehab assignment in Trenton. There was something on the Yes broadcast when he was activated talking about how he was just swinging as hard as he could down in Trenton to make sure he wasn't injured. And that's the exact type of maniac that Clint Frazier is, and I love him for that.
It's just such a weird thing to say, like to actually come out and say, yeah, I'm just swinging as hard as I possibly can to make sure that my oblique is not injured any longer.
It's great. It's such a meathead move.
It is a meathead move. There's no doubt about it. It's like a Gronkowski type situation there. And, you know, he's had some decent at-bats. He's hit the ball. I mean, I'm talking about long fly balls is what I'm talking about. But he's also been up with the bases loaded a few times and has had some really bad at-bats. So I understand that he's going to have to, you know, it's going to take some time for him to get his legs under him. But unfortunately, there's really not that much time. He's going to have to figure it out pretty quickly or else he's just not going to be playing that often.
Well, if you go back to before he was even injured, he was in a terrible slump. He got off to a nice start, and then he had that big walk-off home run at the stadium in I think his first or second home game. I don't even remember who it was against at this point. But then he went into a big slide before his oblique finally sidelined him.
Well, and you never know. I mean, the oblique could have been part of the reason because he did mention that, you know, at some point he's like, okay, maybe it's at a point now where I should say something. So it was definitely bothering him before he actually, you know, went to the trainers or whomever he spoke about the injury with and told them that it was, you know, a problem and hindering him. So again, there goes with that same mentality. I mean, you like it that a guy wants to be out there at all times, especially a rookie who's, you know, not trying to say I'm hurt at every little ache and pain. He's trying to fight through it. I get that. I love that. But it was definitely a possibility that it was, you know, a problem for him and could have definitely led to him struggling at the end of there too. So you just don't know, I guess. You need him to get it back though. There's no time for him to figure it out at this point.
Well, he's the contingency outfielder at this point with Hicks on the DL. I think they're rolling with Judge, Gardner, and Ellsbury at this point in the outfield.
Yeah, there definitely are. I mean, that's exactly what it is. I think when they get, you know, a left-handed pitcher, a starter up there, that they're going to they'll roll Frazier in when a guy needs a day off or when Joe sees it in his binder that there needs to be another right-handed bat, and that's when he'll play right now. So he's not proving that he's not making any big noise that says I need to play every day. That's for sure.
I thought the atmosphere at Citi Field this week was awesome. The lower bowl was the only thing that was filled, but they were cheap tickets, $25, so they was pretty much sold out in the lower bowl. Everyone was loud because you had real fans there. Real fans were only the ones that were going to go spend $25 and travel all the way to Queens. Citi Field is friggin' in no man's land, especially if you're a Yankees fan. So I thought it was a lot of fun just watching on TV. Everybody was loud in that stadium. And I know people were saying, this is what you get when you lower ticket prices. I understand that's not going to happen, though. It's unrealistic. But for the time being, for the week, this little three-game novelty act, I thought it was a lot of fun.
Well, I think it's a couple things. I mean, you're not getting the regular suits that you get at Yankee Stadium for an event like this, a $25 event at Citi Field. They're just not going to those games. So, like you said before, those are the real fans that see kind of something different. They see, you know, something cool, a $25 game at a different place. It's kind of an event as well, because it probably won't happen again. So you're getting the different type of fan, and it was loud. There's no doubt. There was definitely some like a really good Yankees chants going on. There was a lot of energy throughout the entire game. So it's definitely interesting. I think the Yankees should take a look at how these games went and how the crowd was, and then just kind of take a look at it and, you know, have some meetings and just let's bring it up and talk about how we can, you know, bring that atmosphere of a lot more of those types of fans into Yankee Stadium, because I still think it can be done. You know, there's some fine lines that they can cross, I think, still with and tweaking with the stadium.
Absolutely. You're telling me there's not a midweek game once a week you can lower ticket prices for and have and try and sell the joint out? There's got to be.
Yeah, that's exactly. No, there's a lot of opportunities like that. I think that's part of it. It's you know, I still hate the fact that there, you know, some of the sections are closed off. It's still, to me, it just doesn't feel right when you're in a stadium,
changing.
Especially Yankee Stadium.
They're not digging
that's not
up
changing
the moat.
Anytime soon. I get that, but there's things that they can do to make it a little bit more fan friendly for the entire place. I mean, before you could walk around the whole place, and I get it that things are different and they're changing, and that's fine. It is what it is. But you can't deny the atmosphere that was at Citi with the Yankee fans there, because there were a lot of them and they were loud and it was fun.
The highlight fan, he was not even a Yankees fan. The thumbs down guy. You saw this big burly guy, right?
Yeah, there's no way he was a Rays fan either. He looked way too cynical to be a Rays fan. Like, Rays fans are not cynical. They're just, I don't even know what they are. They're
non-existent.
Yankees fans that go to a Rays game because it's close. They like baseball.
No, Rays fans are
non-existent.
They're
just wearing a hat because they live in Tampa.
Right. This was a Mets fan who probably lives near the stadium and said, you know what? I'm going to spend $25. I'm going to find the only turquoise colored shirt in my closet, and I'm going to go boo and thumbs down the Yankees. And I loved it today. I saw on replay that Todd Frazier gave a little thumbs down when he knocked in an RBI early in the game today. Maybe talking of, you know, a nod to that thumbs down guy.
Well, yeah, wasn't it the Frazier home run that he was holding the thumbs down for? I think it was,
yes.
It was that play. So, I mean, this is a direct, it's a direct response to this guy. It's calling this guy out. You're not a real fan. You're just a dude trying to troll people.
It was just an interesting couple of games, because I think we even said this last week. Why'd the Rays pick Citi Field? Why would you pick New York for a home game when you're playing the Yankees? But at the same time, that's how they were going to get the most people there. So, and I'm assuming they got some sort of revenue from this, right? Because it's technically a home game for them.
There had to have been some kind of a deal worked out. I thought there was money going to the charities for the Hurricanes. If I'm right on that, I thought I heard that. But there was look. Everybody's been saying the Citi Field employees and the people that work for the Mets were very good that entire time. Like, I think all the beat reporters, everybody who was there at the games, was saying that. Even the players were saying it as well, that they did a great job. They even went as far as trying to mimic the scoreboard for what they have at Tropicana. Yeah. And doing some some things that they do at the Tampa game. So, you know, good on the Mets for doing that. Good on the Citi Field people for making it, you know, feel as it actually was probably the best home game that Tampa's ever had, to tell you the truth, because there were actually people there and it wasn't a dump and they could see fly balls.
It was, I think Wally Matthews tweeted that it was the biggest home crowd. Monday's game was the biggest home crowd the Rays have had since like early August.
That's hilarious. Yeah, and that's just such a testimony to the Tampa Bay baseball area and why the hell they need to get the hell out of there, because Rays fans don't live in Tampa, like you said, because they don't exist. They're Yankees fans down there.
Sabathia on Monday night. The Yankees got him a big lead. They scored 5 runs in the 4th inning. Sabathia was pulled at 88 pitches in the 5th inning. And Longoria was coming up. And even after the game, Sabathia said, well, Longoria owns me. Longoria owns the Yankees. He didn't say that, but it's true. Longoria does own the Yankees. Girardi was not going to play around with CeCe. And I thought it was interesting because you and I have talked on this podcast about how Girardi trusts Sabathia. But he trusts him in certain situations. He doesn't trust him in all situations. This was not one of them.
Well, I mean, Girardi's at a point now where he's not trusting most of his guys at this point. There, if he sees a situation that is dicey, he's going to interject. I mean, he's proved that over the past couple of days. And he's pulling guys early. If there's a situation where the other team can potentially get back into the game and there's a twinge of uncertainty. And that was exactly it. CeCe acknowledged the fact that Longoria had very good numbers on him, and Girardi wasn't messing around. He went in and made the move, and was, you know, it ended up being the right move because it worked. I mean, it was the exact situation that we've been talking about with different guys, but it was D-Rob this time going in as a fire extinguisher. We talked about that, you know, there could be different guys with this bullpen. It doesn't need to be just one guy. But because they have so many good back-end arms, there can be multiple guys on different days that have different roles. And that day, it was D-Rob. And I don't know the last time he has gotten that many outs, but he did a phenomenal job. And I love his quote afterwards saying that, I don't care how many innings I pitch. It doesn't matter. I want to do what I need to do to get this team to a championship. You got to love that. I mean, he's already had a bunch of fans for the Yankees, obviously, because he's been here, won a championship. But he got a lot more fans by that quote, too. Dude is exactly what you need.
We were talking about it being the Tommy Kahnle trade, maybe even the Todd Frazier trade if he could have a big second half for the Yankees. It's been the David Robertson trade, and it's not even close.
Yeah, I mean, it has. Kahnle came in very hot, you know, in the beginning, and I think everybody's eyes were popping when they saw what he was doing, because he came in like a bulldog. I mean, he was very, very good in the beginning, and he has since struggled. You know, he's definitely found his struggles, and Frazier hasn't hit for power. He's kind of hit like he's been all year. He's been that guy. But at the same time, Frazier has been a guy in the clubhouse. I think because he's a local guy and just kind of the way he carries himself and talks about things, I think he's a fan favorite. I think people do like him. And it's very obvious that he's meshing very well with the team. And he does play a phenomenal third base. So he's had some good contributions, but D-Rob has definitely been the highlight of this trade. There's no doubt about it.
I like what Girardi did using Robertson as the fireman with guys on base. He's the Houdini act. He can get guys out outs coming in with runners on base. I believe we talked about last time how Kahnle and Betances are not good with inherited runners. So maybe Robertson's the guy, because there was a quote that Jack Curry tweeted out today about Girardi's usage of Chad Green and how he plans it out for Chad Green. So you can't really plan out using a fireman. So Robertson can go out there. Like he said, I'm going to pitch whenever the hell the Yankees need me. If it's in the 5th inning, the 6th inning, the 9th inning, the 50th inning, I'm going to go out there and pitch. So maybe Robertson's the fireman, and Chad Green is just going to have to be managed a little bit more because he's a younger guy, and that's how Girardi's using him.
Well, I think at the same time, if it's he's got confidence in both of those guys. I mean, you saw what Chad Green can do. I mean, he came in again today and was just absolutely filthy. So he's got the confidence. You can't plan for these fire extinguishers, like you're saying, but at the same time, when you have multiple guys and it works out, then it's fine because you have the confidence that you can bring in more than one dude to do that same job. So that's the beauty of what's going on with this bullpen. It's so freaking deep that Girardi actually has options, and they're all good options. So it's hard for him to screw things up, although he tries very hard to screw them up.
Well, it's hard, but he sometimes overmanages, like we saw on Wednesday afternoon. And he brings in Chad Green, he gets an inning and a third, which is fine. He brings in Kahnle, and then he probably pulls Betances too soon, brings in Chapman, who apparently he now trusts again. Chapman was on the shit list for like 2 weeks, and now he's back to being a four-out save guy. Girardi is comfortable bringing him in. It was just a lot of overmanagement that I saw from Girardi this afternoon.
Well, there's no doubt today at the end when he was going, when Betances was in the eighth inning, it was just the strangest move to me, because you have, I mean, but his control wasn't all there. When has it been there? It's few and far between where Betances' control has been there for an entire outing. I mean, I could say the same thing about Chapman though. Yes, he's been better lately, but he hasn't been great for an extended period of time with his control. He's been very good lately, but not enough to pull Betances against Steven Souza Jr., who's a freaking right-handed bat, bringing in pulling Betances in the middle of the inning with two outs to bring in Chapman to get four outs for a save. You bring in a closer for a four-out save when you don't have the faith in the guy that's throwing at that point, or your bullpen is just a different type of situation than it is right now. It was a very weird move, and I don't understand bringing in Chapman after he has really started to right the ship and he's looking like that dominant guy again with his stuff. I mean, he's getting swings and misses again, and you bring him in a situation to get four outs where he's got to get one out and then sit and then come back out for the ninth. I don't know. It was just it was weird, and to me again, it was just Girardi not getting the flow of the game. And just going with whatever the binder or whatever his little sheet says for that particular day. It was a very strange move.
But you know how Betances is. When he doesn't have it, he doesn't have it. Girardi must have thought he didn't have it. He was leaving his breaking ball up. He wasn't throwing strikes again. So I don't know. Can we really blame Girardi for pulling Betances after what we've seen him do at random times this season? He completely loses it and shits the bed.
The reason you can talk about it and question why he does it, I'm not going to say that it was like the most horrendous move in the entire world. It was strange to me. It was just one that I'm scratching my head and don't understand. And the reason is because Chapman has not been this guy that's been like your most consistent. He was demoted to like the fifth and sixth inning, for God's sakes, not too long ago. So why are you bringing him in for a four out save? It doesn't make sense. Put guys in situations that are, you know, that they're going to succeed in, or at least that they have a better chance to succeed in. You know, Betances may have had a little bit of control issues, but he had a filthy curveball tonight. Today, and he wasn't pitching badly. I would have absolutely kept him in. Chapman comes in, walks a guy, gives up a run, and then comes back out for the ninth, walks his first guy, and then dominates after that. But it was just a strange move, and it worked out in the end. I still don't think it was the right move.
Right, we're going to look back in a couple of weeks, and it might not even show up on anything. We might just forget about it, because you're right, the Yankees won the game. But it's these little things, especially with a four-game series coming up and a huge stretch of baseball for the Yankees, where he ran through his entire bullpen today, and Chapman threw a lot of pitches today as well. So it's, I don't know, he seemed a little panicky to me.
There's no doubt it was a panic move. And I don't know why he was. When you make a panic move, you go to a guy that you have 100% confidence in, and Girardi has not had confidence in Chapman, so I don't know why he's going to make that move. That's what I don't get. I don't get that you're bringing in a guy that's also been not at the top of his game this season. It's not like he's been lights out all year long, and that's your guy that's going to come in and get four outs, because he's going to get four outs. You kind of don't know. And that's why I don't get the move, because there was a lot of uncertainty about the move as well. And it was a matchup. Why are you bringing in a lefty for the power right-handed bat who strikes out a lot? Why not leave Betances in for the right-handed bat? This is what I don't understand.
Well, in theory, Chapman should be matchup proof. That's probably not the case this season.
In theory, but everything's in theory for him because of his history, but it's just not the case now.
Mm-hmm. And why did Joe not pinch hit for either Frazier or Romine with the bases loaded in the eighth inning? The Yankees left so many runners on base today, 11 runners on base, 2 for 14 with runners in scoring position. Today's game was basically a microcosm for the 2017 Yankees, where they get a ton of guys on base, they can't get them in. There's a ton of head-scratching moves by Girardi. You're pulling your hair out. You're freaking out. Somehow, Yankees come out with a 3-2 victory.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they won. They won the series. That's another series win. And the game that we really didn't touch on too much, though, was Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray on Tuesday had an unbelievable game. He made a couple mistakes with the home run ball, but like he said, he's challenging guys in situations like that when there's nobody on base, and I like that. I got no problem with that. If he gets beat, he gets beat. But their solo shots, it was two runs. The Yankees got to score runs for him for whatever reason. You know, people were talking today about the amount of time that he takes between pitches and how long he's out there, and maybe that's why the bats get stagnant because it's happened to him in Oakland as well. So maybe there's something else to it. I don't know. I don't really buy that. I think it's just an unfortunate coincidence. But man, you got to get this guy runs when he is dealing like that. I think he had 9 strikeouts through 6 innings. It was something. He was pitching very well and absolutely did not deserve to lose that game.
So he got low run support in Oakland as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that's been following him. There's no doubt about it.
That's interesting. I don't know if the time between pitches has any factor on it. Kind of lulls the offense to sleep while they're in the field. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how guys who take longer to throw pitches get run support. But I'm way too lazy to look that up. Gray was absolutely filthy. He made 2 mistakes on the entire night. The only silver lining, I guess, is he saved the bullpen. One thing I noticed about Sonny Gray, though, is his curveball is what he uses when he needs a strikeout. He uses his sinker and his slider to get ground balls, and that's great. But he was in a big jam in the 5th inning, and he needed strikeouts, and he used his curveball.
Yeah, and he's got some just unbelievable combinations to get guys. With the amount of pitches that he has, again, I've talked about this. I love watching him pitch. I think he's fun to watch because you just never know what's going to come. He could drop a curveball on you. He could throw it 94, 95. But then he's got that filthy slider that has a ton of movement. And when you're looking at it, I tweeted out a GIF the other day from the Pitching Ninja, a guy I follow on Twitter who's just has like unreal GIFs and videos that I retweet a lot. But you could see the different combination between the fastball and the slider. When the ball is coming out of his hand and when the batter is looking at it and identifying the pitch, it looks like the same pitch. And then the late break on the slider is just filthy. It's just absolutely nasty. So he's a fun dude to watch. I do believe that slider, though, when it's on, is probably his best pitch.
So we got a big stretch for the Yankees, 4 games against Baltimore at the stadium and then 3 games against Minnesota. I think, and you and I agree on this, that this stretch is going to tell a lot about if the Yankees are going to be the wild card team or the division team. This next 7 games at home, you got to take care of business.
Yeah, the Orioles are coming in. They're still technically in it. They have, because they're playing the Yankees, they're technically in it. And it's a 4-game set. So, I mean, the Orioles could come in thinking they're going to do some damage. The bottom line is you can hit the Orioles pitching. I don't care how many runs they score. We could probably score 3 more runs every single game because their pitching is horrendous. So the bats need to come to play. If the Yankees pitchers can throw quality starts, I feel confident the Yankees are going to do some damage against the Orioles because their pitching is that bad, especially at Yankee Stadium. We saw what happened last time they came to Yankee Stadium. I think it was the last time was the June 10th event, right? That whole weekend was just a freaking
God, was it that long
just
ago?
A barrage. They may have been there earlier or since then, but that weekend was an unbelievable offensive display by the Yankees. I mean, they embarrassed the Orioles, and the Orioles pitching is not any better. They're still bad. So they have some bullpen guys, but they got to get to those guys in order for them to be effective. So I expect the Yankees offense to come out and stay hot.
Unlike the Yankees at Camden Yards, where the Orioles were beating up on them for the last few years, the Yankees have actually played pretty good against Baltimore at Yankee Stadium. With Cleveland's 21 ridiculous win streak in a row, it's just like the best base stretch of baseball maybe in history. They've overtaken Houston for the number 1 seed in the American League, which means the wild card team is going to be playing Houston. It's not going to be easy having to play that 1-game wild card knowing you've got to go directly to Cleveland. Maybe they're peaking early, maybe they're not, but they're the best team in the American League, and it's not even close. They might be the best team in baseball. I know the Dodgers still have the best record, but they lost 10 games in a row. So Cleveland right now is just on a ridiculous stretch.
Yeah, they're definitely playing unbelievable. But again, I'm telling you, they are going to, at some point, find Earth. And when they find Earth, I have a feeling it's going to be at a very inopportune time. These guys are riding in a ridiculous high, 21 games. That's ties the record, right, for the Cubs. And I think Dom tweeted it out. I saw it like 1935, something ridiculous. And
yeah,
it's
records
been a long
don't
time.
Count from back then.
But it's a game streak. It makes sense. I mean, you can kind of go apples to apples for that. But at the same time, they're going to, you know, they're winning this many games. You got to find some losses here and there. They're gonna come. They're gonna come. It's baseball. It has to come. And they're going to come at bad times.
It's baseball, Scott. That's what
they're going to come at bad times. I know it does. It does. John Sterling knows it damn well it's going to happen.
You're going to watch that center stage with John Sterling that the YES Network has been teasing all week with Michael Kay?
You got to. I mean, that's the two guys back in the same room. They're old partners on WABC 770 when I used to listen to them on the radio when I was a kid. It was those two guys calling the game. So, yeah, I absolutely. It's going to be a little bit of a throwback for me.
Before we get to the segment you did with Ryan, we want to remind you guys to rate and review the podcast in iTunes. The reviews have been coming in, and they've been good. I love it. Keep it up. Go rate this podcast 5 stars right now if you enjoy it. It helps us out a lot. Also, we want to get the voicemails rolling again. Call up the voicemail line, 646-480-0342. You can also submit mailbag questions at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. There's no excuse not to be fired up on the voicemails and the mailbags right now with the Yankees going for the playoffs. We have not had playoff baseball in the Bronx in a while. So everyone needs to get fired up, Scott.
No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, this is the greatest time of your life, and it will be. I'm imitating that dude from Monday Night Football, if you didn't know, but that dude was
I did not know.
Train
I thought
wreck.
You were just stuttering, having a stroke or something.
No, dude was a train wreck. Unfortunately, he had a very bad time on Monday Night Football, and he got destroyed on Twitter. But no, seriously, this is going to be a hell of a week. If the Yankees can take care of business, it's going to look very good to where they are. I think the rest of the season will determine on the positioning and jockeying for what they're going to do. I really want to overtake Boston. I feel like that would be such a strong move this year when we knew going into the season that they were such a heavy favorite. So it would really sting badly if they had to go and play in a wild card, one-game wild card game. And I would love nothing more to see that.
Yeah, also my heart can't take another one-game wild card. All right, guys, stay tuned for the segment with Ryan, and we will talk to you on Monday. Started with nothing, really. I was dreaming, sleeping, rarely. Had a different theory, then I started thinking clearly. Can y'all even hear me? But no, he's on call. Can't turn around now, I know we're not far. And I can smell it. Deep down, they're jealous. That'll never sell us what they used to tell us. Shout out to all the fake fans, to the dreamers that can make plans. All right, like, welcome on the show, Mr. Ryan Rucco of the YES Network and ESPN, the Players Tribune, podcast R2C2, amongst many other things. Ryan, what is going on, my man?
Oh, thank you for having me, dude. Happy to get to chat with you.
You're a busy dude. I'm sure I missed at least 5 job titles within your resume at this point.
No, I think, you know what? I think you did a pretty good job there summing it up, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no doubt. So you're out in Los Angeles covering the WNBA right now. And obviously, I'm sure you've been keeping an eye on what the Yankees are doing out on the East Coast, going back to with a big stretch into the Bronx. What are your overview thoughts of what you're seeing from this team right now?
You know, I feel really good about the way they're playing. I know that, you know, obviously they lost a tough middle game against the Rays, you know, another one-run loss. But and you know, you couple the first two games against the Rays, and they, you know, the offense quieted a bit, although the run total was fine in the first game. Obviously, the hits were down a little bit. But I think if you look at the way they've been playing, and even if you look at some of the games they've lost recently, you know, their offense, since they've gotten healthy, since they've gotten Castro back, since they've gotten Holiday back, you know, since they've gotten Bird back, although I know, you know, he's on the shelf for a few days and has struggled a little bit over the last few games, but his contributions as soon as he got back were certainly significant, especially against the Red Sox. But I think when you look at their offense, when it is whole, it has performed much like it did at the beginning of the season, which was as a top offense in baseball. And then you consider just how consistent this starting rotation has been basically since the All-Star break. I think you have to feel really good about the way that they're playing. I think when you think about the ability to send out Sonny Gray, Tanaka, Severino, CeCe, and the way the offense is clicking, plus the arms in the bullpen, although we know they've had, you know, their shaky moments, their numbers overall are great. I think you have to feel like this is a team that at any point can rattle off a lot of wins in a row, and right now they're winning series consistently, so I feel pretty good about them.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that when we saw how many injuries this starting rotation actually had, that we would, you know, this conversation, if we were to predict it you know, 2 months ago, we don't think this would be the outcome. We didn't think that they would be as consistent as they are, especially with Tanaka's struggles and you know, Pineda going down. Granted, he was up and down after his really hot start. So, yeah, I think the team is in a very good place at this point. And I think you're right. You know, when you look up and down the bullpen, the starting rotation, and the healthy offense, this is a team that is, honestly, I've been touting this for a while. It's really built for the playoffs. It's built for a short series because of their depth and their top-tier talent.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, and also, I always think in the postseason, you need dangerous hitters. You know, you need guys who are going to make that pitcher slow down his tempo and his rhythm and be afraid to make a mistake. And the Yankees have that. You know, I mean, with Sanchez and Judge, they have two hitters who are as scary as any other two hitters in the American League. And I know that obviously Judge has had a slower second half, although he's looked, you know, much better of late and seems to, his approach seems to be more similar to the way it was in the first half, which is encouraging. But I think that that's so key, having hitters that are going to, you know, make the opposing team really think about you and be super careful with you and issue that walk they didn't want to. And then there's plenty of other good, strong, consistent hitters in that lineup and people who just do their job. You know, the way Brett Gardner has operated as a leadoff man this year has been so valuable, even when he's not getting on base, just the way he works the count and sees pitches, his clutch gene, you know, the way Headley has hit, you know, save 1 month this season, the way that Didi has consistently produced, the threat that Castro poses, you know, even a guy like Todd Frazier, who I think is playing a way better third base than any of us realized he could, the fact that, you know, he can work in a bat, you know, he's certainly willing to wear one for the team, and he's still a power threat at any moment. I like the way their lineup is composed. And I think that if you got to a playoff series, I mean, how great would you feel just in games one and two sending out a Severino and a Gray, you know? And then it's like, okay, you know, in game three, you could send out Tanaka, and then you could send out CeCe, who's been unbelievable in big spots and after losses this year, in a game four. That's pretty strong stuff. Plus, you think about the availability of every one of your top relievers for basically as long as you'd want because of a postseason schedule. So, you know, they have to get there. And of course, if they win a wild card, there's the danger of the one game. But I agree with you. I think if they get there and they get in a series, they're really dangerous.
Yeah, and not even just the pitching staff as well, but Joe has some very good options when he's going up against, no matter who it is, whether it's a, you know, a lefty or a righty starting pitcher, he's got options in the field. I mean, this team is so deep at this point that I think he can really match up well to, you know, whatever the opposing pitcher is. And that's a huge, huge part of being in the playoffs and succeeding in the playoffs. Now, Girardi has proven lately that he's able to, you know, pull those strings and make sure that he's putting the right guys in the right positions. I mean, look what Headley's done at first base. We all knew that he was starting to hit as a lefty, but since the All-Star break, he's hitting as a right-handed bat. And you look at his year numbers, like you said, throw away that 1 month. He's been consistent, very consistent, and he's been pretty damn good over at first.
He has been. And it's great to have those options. You're 100% right. If you think about some of the Yankees championship teams, right, from the late 90s and what they would do matching up depending on who was on the mound. You know, would it be Strawberry or would it be Raines? You know, would it be Fielder or would it be Tino? You know, is Ricky Ledet or Shane Spencer going to get a starter? How about Chad Curtis? You know, I mean, there were a lot of times where the Yankees ended up going to, you know, a lefty or a righty, depending on the start or the mound. Think about the game one in 98 that Ledet had off of Kevin Brown because, you know, he was the lefty option to go up against that righty in Brown. So I think you're right. I think having those options, feeling like you can go any route you want to, it is critical. And you know that inevitably when you get in a postseason series, you're going to have one of those games where, you know, you're going to have extra innings and somebody's going to pinch run and then somebody else is going to get up in a spot where you'd rather not have them. And the good news is there's really nobody on this Yankee team who you feel like, oh man, we have to have an at bat with him. I mean, literally every member of their bench brings something to the table offensively that makes you feel like they could get something done. And that is a unique asset that could be deployed come postseason time.
You know, it's funny that you make the comparison to those late 90s teams. And while it's dangerous to make comparisons to those teams, I get it. If for nothing else, but expectations of the fans listening, I understand that those are dangerous comparisons. But I agree with you in the sense that that this team has those types of depth. And doesn't it kind of feel like the finger and the thumb all over this team that Gene Stick Michael has really had a significant influence when talking with Brian Cashman, making those moves? I don't know. To me, we were talking about this on our last show. It does feel like a very similar type of roster.
Well, it does, because they've used a similar type of blueprint to what they did to build those teams, you know? I mean, first of all, Brian Cashman would be the first one to tell you that Gene Michael has had an incredible influence on, you know, the way he goes about his business as a mentor and a friend. So I think that Gene Michael's blood will always run through the decision-making of this front office because of that connection between Stick and Cash. But I also think if you just look at the general blueprint of, hey, we're going to build through the farm. We're going to be patient with our young guys. You know, we're not going to deal them all. You know, the Yankees could have very easily, in past situations, have gone out this offseason and dealt, you know, Sanchez. I mean, maybe Sanchez and Judge would have been too much, but I don't know if it would have at the time in a deal for Chris Sale, you know. But they knew that that's not the way to build what they're trying to build. So I definitely think there are some comparisons that way. Also, just the, you know, the idea of a patient offense that sees pitches, that, you know, provides power threats. And you know, if you were looking at their team and saying, okay, you know, what are they missing? Maybe one of the things is having that sort of, I want to say, prototypical two-hitter who's going to hit for a high average and be able to, you know, move the ball around, get on base, not strike out a lot, and just give a real consistent at bat versus bad or good pitching. So I could see that maybe being something where, like, okay, you know, a guy who's really tough to be pitched to, a guy who doesn't have any holes in his swing. So if you're looking to nitpick the offense and what maybe it could have that would help it in October times, maybe that's the kind of thing that they'd still sort of be searching for. But otherwise, I agree that the composition is very much in the mold of what Stick Michael would want.
All right, now pulling it back just a little bit, I want to talk to you just a bit about where you grew up and just some things about yourself. I did see that you grew up in the Hudson Valley. Did you grow up a Yankees fan?
I did. Grew up a diehard Yankee fan.
I was going to say, I've seen Yankees hats in some of your Instagram pictures, so I was kind of leaning that direction. So a question, when you're growing up a diehard Yankees fan, like you said, how do you find that right blend of homerism, realism, and then being objective when you're calling a game? Because I'm sure it's a struggle.
Well, so it's interesting because, you know, I do national games as well when it comes to basketball, right? So I do a lot of NBA for ESPN. So and then I do WNBA for ESPN. So I'm constantly doing broadcasts where there has to be absolutely no, you know, favoring one side or the other when it comes to, you know, the amount of time you spend on the teams or, you know, or the energy in your voice or whatever it might be. And I think that probably helps some because you get reps in that vein. But the thing that helps the most is that I care so much more about doing a good job than I do who wins any game that I do. Like, it is vitally important to me that I give, you know, an accurate, fair, honest broadcast of any game I do, whether it's the Yankees or the Nets or it's a national game. So when I do a Yankee game, is it better for me and is it better for the broadcast if the Yankees win? Absolutely. Am I going to get more excited, you know, when the Yankees hit a big home run than when the Tigers do? Yeah, you bet I am. Of course, my audience is Yankee fans. Like, it would not make sense to that audience if I didn't. But am I going to, you know, try and sound like a fan or get mad if there's an out in a big spot or not acknowledge a great play by the other team? Absolutely not. Like, the priority is still having a great broadcast, not who wins the game. So, you know, I always look at it, the way I always look at TV play-by-play is it's like the score to a movie. You know, if you're watching a movie and, you know, you see the killer walk in the room, you know he walks in the room, you're seeing it. But that music helps make the moment come to life, right? That dun-dun-dun. If when the killer walked in the room, you heard a flowery harp, it wouldn't make sense to you. Just like if when Steph Curry hit a half-court buzzer beater, I was just like, well, Curry hits the shot and the Warriors go in front. You'd be like, huh? Did it not count or something? So you want your inflection and your voice to always make sense to the moment, to help it come to life for the audience, much the way music in a movie does, as they're seeing the pictures. And so in that sense, you have to consider who the audience is. And that's sort of how you differentiate. So yeah, when my audience is mainly Yankee fans and Clint Frazier hits a huge two-run double to break a 2-2 tie in the eighth inning and give the Yankees the lead, they're going to expect me to be more excited, and it will make more sense to them than if, you know, Nick Castellanos hits a two-run double to give the Tigers the lead in that spot. But on a national game where the audience is split down the middle, then it's the same level of excitement because you're just doing what makes sense for the viewer and the game.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I've switched to some broadcasts of opponents occasionally just to kind of get the tune from the other side as well. And it's amazing how many, I think the Orioles in particular, whenever the Yankees do anything positive, I mean, it's dead silence. Jim Palmer and Gary, I can't remember, they are absolutely just numb to anything that happens. And you almost don't even realize that something happened. So I think there is a fine line with that. But it's interesting to hear your take on that.
It's you know, because the other part of, sorry to cut you off, man. The other part of it is like, you know, it's not you don't have to act responsible as the announcer for what's going on the field because it's not your fault, no matter what kind of jinx people think there may be, right. You know. So there's no reason to dull or whatever what's going on for the other team. If it is great, that doesn't mean you have to be over the moon because your audience isn't going to be as excited about it. But like, nobody's going to be like, oh, he's the reason why they got that hit. You know what I mean? Like, ultimately, logic prevails. So you might as well give the moment whatever the appropriate due is.
I agree with you. I think Twitter is an exception for that because there is no logic. There's zero logic on Twitter. If we tweet something from Bronx Pinstripes that says anything to the contrary of what happens, it's our fault. There's no doubt about it. My co-host Andrew is constantly jinxing people. So there is some real Twitter jinxing as far as the fan base is when they look at us. There's no doubt about it.
But you know what's funny about that? Like, honestly, it's really a venting tool, right? Like that's what Twitter is. In almost every circumstance of those interactions, if you were to have a one-on-one conversation with people who tweet these kind of things, they would say, yeah, you know what, ultimately you're right. I know you didn't have anything to do with that. You know, but it's something about the group setting and the forum and, you know, just having this medium to be able to share your, you know, frustrations or just like that quick burst of anger or venting that puts people in position to say things that they probably don't believe, which I get is part of being a fan, is part of the communal experience of it. But I think ultimately, like I found too, when somebody says something critical to me on Twitter, you know, 99% of the time when I go back to them and say like, you know, hey, thanks for listening, it's like, oh, you know, I'm actually a big fan, you know, like it's a venting tool, you know? So I think that it's a lot of times you have to take Twitter for the medium, not the content. Like Marshall McLuhan has this great thing, the medium is the message. And I think that's kind of what it is. Like the medium just allows for this kind of content, but I'm not sure people actually believe the content that they share.
You have a new podcast that started, a couple months ago with CC Sabathia. And one thing I have noticed is with your time doing work with the Yankees and working for the Yes Network and talking with these players, it seems like you have a very good rapport with a lot of the players. And obviously with CC Sabathia, you guys have started a podcast together. So listening to that early episode about how you guys would talk music, and it was just really casual conversations in the clubhouse more than, you know, your typical broadcast player relationship. It seems more of a natural relationship than that. So what do you attribute these relationships to and how it helps your broadcast?
Well, you know, I'm glad that you're able to see that, man, and you observe that because I do feel fortunate that I feel like I do have really good relationships in that clubhouse with a lot of the guys. And, you know, I think that that's one of the areas where being a little bit younger probably helped me
some,
because I'm 30. I've been around the Yankee clubhouse one way or another, in and out, since I was 19, beat reporting for WFUV, and you know there might have been a season here or there where I wasn't, but for the most part, you know, I've been around, and so I've gotten to know a lot of people over time. And you know, I think that, you know, being able to relate with certain interests and stuff, being around similar ages helps. I think, you know, just trying to be, you know, professional and there and accountable helps. And then some of it too was just fortuitous in having some mutual friends and getting to know guys better that way. You know, in the case of CeCe, me and him just kind of clicked as soon as he came over in 09, because, you know, we were both big basketball fans and we would talk about the Lakers all the time. And he was just so nice and unassuming, especially for a player of his stature. And we just kind of hit it off. And so we always maintained a nice, then we did a couple features together for Yankees on Demand, and we just maintained a nice relationship. And then eventually we kind of ended up realizing, like, we had, you know, some mutual friends. My buddy Matt Siegel, who worked for Rock Nation, did stuff with CeCe. And then one of my close friends is a guy named Matt Nimer, who's CeCe's guy in the clubhouse. So we all just kind of, like, ended up, you know, hanging out and hitting it off and whatever, and our friendship sort of developed from there. So that one just, it sort of started in the clubhouse and continued with some of our mutual connections. But, you know, it's a balance, because, you know, there may be times where you obviously have to be, you know, critical of these guys or whatever. And so you always have to make sure your relationships, sure, they are, you know, you're going to always have personal relationships in this business. And usually I think they really do serve the job rather than hurt it, because I think, you know, you end up learning things and getting to know guys way better and understanding their perspective. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why I also wanted to stop hosting, like, a daily radio show, was because I did sort of feel the conflict of the way you handle something play-by-play wise when you're evaluating someone versus as a talk show host, you know, because there is a difference. And anyway, I feel like I always kind of go by the Mike Breen rule. He taught me this when I was in college, like, never say something on air that you wouldn't say to the player's face. So, you know, when you have those relationships, it's real easy for me to be like, well, CeCe's struggling today. Cause if I'm talking to CeCe later, I'm going to say, man, today was a struggle, huh? You know, but, like, that's different than me saying, like, well, CeCe has been terrible today, you know, like, that I'm not going to say, because it's not something I would say to his face. So I won't say it on air. And so that kind of helps preserve those relationships when you can just be honest in your evaluations and fair in the way you assess guys, I guess.
So CeCe's had a very good year. I think some may not have expected it. I mean, with the knee injury, I felt,
yeah,
like, and I'm one of them, you know, I thought that him getting an age and seeing that knee was going to be, a struggle for him physically to actually go out and pitch a full season. He's really learned how to, you know, pitch the way he needs to at this point in his career. You know, people attribute him talking with Pettit and a very similar kind of, you know, the way that they end their careers towards the, yeah, end of their careers, they're really trying to master the pitching rather than using their dominant fastball and things like that CeCe had early on. So I think a lot of chatter has been, after what's been happening this year, that the Yankees maybe bring him back on a 1-year deal. Do you get the feeling that CeCe still wants to pitch? And is that something that, you know, he's looking at? Because he's obviously starting some post-retirement plans with the podcasting.
Yeah, I think, I definitely think he still wants to pitch, you know? I'm sure we will do a podcast at some point that really delves into it. But my, you know, I think if they won the World Series this year, he would seriously consider retiring.
Sure.
And you know, had that knee injury been worse, I think that also might have pushed him closer to retirement. But I think that the fact that he's performed so well, and the thing is, he still loves competing, you know, like, we've talked about how, like, he just aches to be back on the mound at Yankee Stadium in October, hearing the crowd, you know, and that's sort of what drives him. So I could tell you this, there is no chance CeCe pitches for anyone who isn't a legitimate World Series contender, you know,
sure.
And he obviously knows the Yankees are that and believes they are that. But I think he would love to continue to pitch, and I think he would love to continue to pitch here with the Yankees. You know, his kids have a lot going on here, and he's established a beautiful life in New Jersey. So I think there's, you know, I think there's definitely a strong desire to continue to pitch here with the Yankees. And if I'm the Yankees had obviously seriously considered it as well, because, you know, he's, I don't know what the finances are going to be, but, you know, we know the long, it's not going to be some kind of long-term commitment. And he gives you innings. He has, he's a great leader in that clubhouse. I see the way the guys gravitate towards him. He's an amazing teammate. And as we've seen this year, when you need a win, he can still go out and give it to you. So I think it, as of now, I think a continuation of this relationship probably makes sense.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I was thinking more of along the lines of like a Hiroki Kuroda deal, 1 year fashion coming back. It seems like at this point in his career, I mean, he, like you said, he's got a life in the tri-state area. You know, he's obviously developing a relationship with the media and doing things like that too in New York. So I think it's, it seems like a very good fit. Plus the Yankees brass has to see that, that crazy little smile that CC gets every time there's a scuffle on the field. who doesn't want that on their side? Because it's great to see the, how much he relishes being with his guys, and you can just tell he loves doing it.
He does, man. He does. He couldn't help but show me right after that, like as we were getting ready to get on the plane. He's like, "Yo, look at this." It was the video of him smiling in the middle of the scuffle as he's holding Gardner back, which him and Hicks and Didi were funny about in one of our episodes of R2C2, kind of just talking about that whole incident. But CeCe is one of those guys, you know. He's like he's a ride or die type teammate, and he's got his teammates back. Like even if you think to a couple of years ago when who was it on the Astros with Brett Oberholzer who threw behind A-Rod after he gave up. Give up a grand slam to McCann and like a 2-run homer to Chris Young. And he just threw behind A-Rod because he was struggling. And CeCe was the first one out of the dugout having to be held back by Joe Girardi. You know, I mean, he just always, he's that dude, you know, he's not afraid of anything. And he really protects and loves his teammates. You know, I think it's why he also built the bond he did so quickly with the guys in Milwaukee when he was there, to the point that he really thought there was a legitimate chance he was coming back there. You know, because he's that guy who people just gravitate to, and he develops a quick relationship with. So I kind of agree with you. There's something to the value of having a teammate like that in the clubhouse, and I'm sure that's, you know, one of the things that will be on the pro column when the Yankees do their evaluations of how they want to move forward.
Talking about the lineup now, quickly, the two-hitter is something that you touched on. I have been looking and circling the man, Didi Gregorius. You had him on your show. You've spoken with him. The guy seems like there is no big moment that bothers him. He's put up some of the most consistent numbers on the Yankees this year. I mean, the guy's been phenomenal. He's turned out, when he came to the Yankees, he couldn't hit left-handed pitching for the life of him. Now he can't miss it. He's one of the better lefties against left-handed pitching. So it seems like he can make that adjustment depending on who the, you know, starting pitcher is. And I know Joe likes to do the lefty righty switch at the top of the lineup, but he seems like one of those guys that is able to take those moments and really give consistent at bats the entire time, no matter, you know, what the situation. I saw a stat a couple days ago saying that when with the bases loaded, Didi is batting .405 in 42 at bats with 44 RBIs. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is. He has great at bats with men in scoring position. He comes through with big hits. I don't feel like he's overwhelmed by good pitching or bad pitching. He's a guy who I do think is pretty consistent no matter who's on the mound, and that is one of those, you know, valuable things that you're right, I was talking about. I guess the tough part about him in the two hole is he's not necessarily the biggest on base guy, you know. He's not a guy who walks. So then it's a matter of, okay, like you could put him in the two hole and it'd just be a little, you know, less traditional, a little more contact. But would you rather, since he's not a guy who's necessarily setting the table, but more so clearing it, would you rather him hit a little bit later and have opportunities to drive in runs?
Do you think that Joe Girardi's future as a Yankees manager is dependent on how the Yankees do down the stretch and into the playoffs? We know he's had success with young teams with Florida before. It seems like that the Yankees are going to want to, you know, progress into this next era with a solid, you know, with one guy and really give him the keys. And it seems like it's Girardi's team. It doesn't seem like there's anything questioning that besides people on Twitter. But do you think he's pretty much solid there, or it does depend on what happens this year?
You know, I have to say, I really have absolutely no insider knowledge as to how that is going to take place. So I really, really honestly, this isn't me ducking you. I really honestly do not know how they will handle it. You know, I think that there's a good, respectful working relationship between Brian Cashman and Joe Girardi for what each other does. I think there's a real respect for the attention to detail that Joe pays and for his work ethic and how much he cares. And, you know, Joe also, you know, he has kids who are at different points in their life. And, you know, I know his son Dante is developing athletically. And Joe is always kind of taking it, you know, contract to contract and year to year and seeing what life, you know, gives him. So, you know, I know people will sometimes say like, hey, you know, there's no guarantee that Joe will want to continue to do it because maybe he's ready for the next step of his life. And we always know, you know, when it comes to the Yankees, things are always fluid and in flux because you have serious expectations. But, you know, I would think that there's a really good chance that relationship continues. I think Joe seemed energized by having all the young talent that they have right now. And I could see him wanting to continue to steward that into the future because it is an exciting time for this organization and there are really amazing possibilities on the horizon. But at the same time, you know, it's a taxing job that he's done for a long time now. And if he was like, you know what, it's time to move on and do something else or take some time off, I could see that too. So I really am not sure. I don't know if it depends how the rest of the season goes. You know, I don't know if it depends how the playoffs go, because one thing that's very clear is Brian Cashman is not overreacting to the moment. He has a really good long-term vision. And I think that, you know, that enables them to see the forest through the trees, even if there was, you know, say like, a pivotal mistake that cost them a game that ousted them from the playoffs. I don't think that would be the determining factor in Joe's future, because I think they know how to look at the broader, bigger picture. So I think a lot more will go into it than that.
That being said, looking at the final stretch now and talking about the Yankees getting into the playoffs, Cleveland is ridiculously smoking hot, 20 in a row. I mean, maybe they're peaking too early. I don't know. This is they still have a few weeks left of baseball. It's hard to imagine if you subscribe to the John Sterling, you know, that's baseball Susan train of thought, then you're going to think that Cleveland's going to slow down at some point. And maybe they are peaking a little too early, but they're obviously a juggernaut right now. Yankees are trailing by 4 in the East, over plus 3 on the Twins in the wild card. What is your looking into a crystal ball? What are you seeing for this team, you know, down the stretch of the regular season and into the playoffs?
You know, for the Indians or for the Yankees?
For the Yankees.
You know, I think that the Yankees are going to play really good baseball the rest of the way, so long as they stay healthy, knock on wood. And I think that they're going to go into the playoffs feeling really good about themselves. I don't think the division is off the table yet, because I think the way the Yankees are lined up, they're perfectly capable of going on a long winning streak. It's obviously going to be very hard because the Red Sox are a good team and they have that 4-game cushion. And that's hard to overcome in this short amount of time when you don't have any games against them. But I wouldn't say it's off the table yet. And I think that either way, the Yankees are going to feel, I think they're going to play good baseball down the stretch the rest of the way and go into the playoffs thinking that anything is possible. And that, you know, if let's say they're the wild card, if they can get by that first game, then look out, because anything's on the table. So that's kind of how I see the rest of the season going. You know, I think it's significant that Chapman's been able to reimmerse into his closer's role, and I think that's the best possible scenario for this Yankee bullpen, and how good he's looked this last few times out, I think, is so significant to their ultimate success. I love the way Joe deployed David Robertson the other day. Yep. And I love the weapon that Chad Green is. So I think that when you combine, you know, those four guys, with Betances being the other in the pen, and then your top four starters, and the potency of the Yankee lineup, I think as long as they're healthy, they're gonna win most series throughout the end of this season and go into the playoffs feeling good about themselves, whether they're going in as a wild card or they're going in as the American League East champions.
Love it. Ryan, appreciate you. Appreciate your work. And thank you very much. looking forward to the rest of the season. There's no doubt about it. I agree with you. I think that anything's on the table if this team can get hot. So appreciate it, Ryan. Have a safe trip back to the East Coast when you do come back.
Thanks so much for having me, man. Much appreciated.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.